Hello everyone and welcome. My name is Andrew.
And I'm Rachel.
We are Peak to the Sea podcast. We are a true crime podcast aiming to put you, the listener, at the scene of the crime. Each week we delve into the murky world of lesser known crimes from the UK and Ireland, and also occasionally we venture into renowned cases from around the globe. So this week, everyone, it's a very special week. We've got something special for you. We've got some guests on the show. So for once, we're not going to be recording naked. But who do we have? I hear you all collectively asking yourselves. Well, we've got none other than Neil and Megan from More Two Musings. So welcome both of you to the corner of our podcasting world.
How's it going?
Thank you so much for having us on. We're very excited to be here.
That's great. So it's great to have you both. And I've picked out a case especially for you two. But before we get into it, I have a few questions to ask so our audience can get to know you a little bit better. So is that okay?
Perfect.
Depends on the question.
So my first question is probably the most important one. And I have, so all honesty to our listeners here, I did send some questions over to Neil, but that's not entirely the questions, all the questions I'm going to ask. I like some of them to be a surprise. So sorry about this, Neil.
Uh-oh.
Questions. And answer. So my first question is probably the most important one. Did you both get the invoice for the fee we charge for being a guest on our show?
No, I didn't.
Oh, same. Well, I'll tell you what, go on and I'll send you the bill after. So yeah, I'm only joking. But why don't you start with telling us a little bit about yourselves and your podcast?
You want to go first?
Yeah. So we started the podcast because I've always loved true crime. Neil, not so much. I always will listen to a podcast or watch a documentary and then end up just researching it myself. So, I mean, I thought, why not record that? And another big part of that is after I've looked into it, I'll sit there to Neil and say, did you hear this? Did you read this? Did you know this? So I think it's quite funny to get his reactions from these horrific details. It's
hilarious for you and everyone else.
Yes, that's the fun.
So this is actually a true story. So you're actually getting inside knowledge here because this won't come out until 2 weeks' time. We recorded an episode on pirate punishments. It's not out yet. And after we recorded it, I went to bed. and I had a nightmare, but I was walking the plank and I fell off. And she, what did you say? I cried. I cried out.
Well, would you like me to try and do the noise?
Try.
It was kind of like a, it was just this like squeal type noise. Now, Neil talks a lot in his sleep, but I've never heard him do that. I don't know what that was.
Bit of a squealer then. So actually, this is going to come out on the same day that Neil and Megan released their pirate episode. So you can listen to this and then go and listen to the dulcet tones talk about pirates, maybe.
Can I just say, for someone that's not into true crime, Neil is wearing like your atypical criminal like outfit here, black polo neck.
Yes, yeah,
isn't
it? Yeah.
Like he won't have a clue, but like me, Megan and Andrew are all thinking, God, I hope Megan's safe. Like,
yeah.
Well, do you know, I have the high neck on as well. I was thinking, oh God, we're gonna look like we're in a cult or something with this. Some kind of uniform.
What's this got to what? I don't understand.
Why am I getting targeted?
Anyway.
Well, like Jeffrey Dahmer glasses, I'd understand. But...
Hey, Andrew's got a pair of them.
I do have a pair of Jeffrey Dahmer glasses, actually. I'm not going to put them on. So your podcast is called, and actually, before we get into it, just so our listeners know, you two are a couple, aren't you? You're not just two random people who talk to each other.
Yeah, we are a couple, yeah.
Yes. What's the story behind choosing your podcast name? Because it's quite an unusual name.
Am I taking this one as well?
Well, you're the one who came up with it.
Okay, so we had many different names, different variations. And we're thinking because we've actually just switched off, but we did night work. So we were trying to think of something of the night shift, night life, night work, or something around that. Couldn't quite get it right. And then we thought the podcast is going to be kind of fun and have a bit of comic relief where we can. So we thought Mortal Musings was a slightly more fun name. We liked the double M on it as well. We thought it was just a more palatable name than something.
Yeah, because you were thinking like Graveyard Shift.
Yeah, all that type of
stuff.
There was
no hope someone else didn't have that.
Yeah, it was very difficult. But yeah.
Yeah. And just to cover it, everyone, I have listened to most of Neil and Megan's episodes, and yeah, they do add the humour there, but you never make fun of the victims, do you?
No.
We always try and...
when you say the slogan.
We take the cases seriously, but not our sins.
Yeah. That's... You don't sound very confident in it.
You put me on the spot. No, so yeah, we do try and have fun, but we'll always keep it related to the case, but it'll never be about the case.
I get you. So what makes your approach unique when you cover true crime stories?
I don't think our podcast is specifically unique. I think there's a lot of true crime podcasts. There's a lot of true crime podcasts that try to incorporate humor, but I think it's always good to hear a different perspective. I could have heard, you know, like a very big case like Ted Bundy. I could have heard that told loads of times. I will still go back and listen to someone new talk about it just to hear if they have anything, you know, a slightly different angle, different take on something.
Okay, that's good. So I've got two more questions and then we can, everyone, so bear with us and then we can jump into the case. If our listeners are like me, and I think most of them are, because I chat to quite a lot of them, when I start a new podcast, when I start listening to a new podcast, I scroll through the episodes to see which one looks the most interesting to listen to first. So just to help give them a guide, which is your favourite episode you've made so far?
See, I have two.
Okay.
I'll say my two, because I know what yours is.
Yeah.
So I have two for two different reasons. So the first case to affect me personally, because I do all the editing. So after we recorded the episode, and then I have to sit down and edit, I had to break away about four or five times from editing, because it was the Joseph Arady case, the wrongful execution of Joseph Arady. That one seemed to stick with me for quite a while. And then another one, just because on a personal note, the Kenny Carter, the murder-suicide of Pam and Kenny Carter. I think, you know, I don't like to blow our own trumpet, but I think we did a really good job, you know, with Megan's true crime knowledge of doing the research, and then my knowledge personally from being in the Speedway community, but my dad knew Kenny.
Mm.
So they'd be my two.
Yeah, and for me, it will be Jodie Plachet. I quite enjoyed doing that because I like that we were able to have a little bit of a debate about it during the episode, and also to see what he's done with his life after going through all of that. He's very inspirational. Yeah, it was a very enjoyable episode, I thought.
Okay, and just on the Carter episode, since that 2 days ago, and yeah, your knowledge quite blatantly comes through in that one. But yeah, they're all good episodes. So last question, and this one I'm stealing from the questions we did with Seeing Red, because I liked it so much. If you could make anything a crime that isn't currently a crime, and be as humorous as you want, what would it be?
Ooh, oh, I wish we could have prepared for this one.
Should we go first?
Yeah, okay. Go on, Rachel.
What was mine? I think mine was like people that eat really loudly and like do things really loudly, and it's like, you know, check yourself kind of thing. I can literally hear those crisps hitting every one of your teeth. But my favorite from, I want to say it was Mark, was the dog poop. Oh, was mine the dog poop?
No, mine was the dog poop.
Was yours the dog poop?
I'm glad it's your favourite.
I think we all agreed, though, that particularly the dog poop was up there.
Yeah, and that's people. No, that's not dogs pooing. They're allowed to poo. That's that is people not picking it up, and the people that do pick it up, some of them tie it to branches, and I never understood that. If you're gonna pick it up, just take it home if you're putting a bin. Anyway, so that's ours. Poo and eating loudly, not necessarily together.
See, I have two what come to mind.
Well, pick socks, one.
Socks with sandals.
Socks with sandals.
Good shout.
That could be a crime, yeah. People wouldn't disagree with you there. Megan.
Yeah. Okay, this is kind of in keeping with the noise thing. What about people who clap when the plane lands?
Oh, I hate that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, no.
Speaking of airplane, the ones who keep having to mess with lights and everything.
Yeah.
Yes. Just aeroplane etiquette in general, actually, isn't it? Like,
yes.
You don't know who you're going to bump into on a plane. But listen, Neil said he had two. I need to hear that second one.
Lane hogging.
Pardon?
Lane hogging.
Lane hogging. So if someone's
interpreter here.
If someone's just driving in the right-hand lane, doing 20 miles an hour under the speed limit.
So, yeah, no, it's, I understand all of those things. So let's get into it, shall we? Now, Neil and Megan, we've got a tradition. And we have to make sure we're ready. So we have to ask this question. Are you ready for some true crime?
Yes, I think so. You will. Okay. It depends how bad this case is.
At least 70% of your audience today. No, God, baby brain is at it today. At least half of the people on this call are ready for some true crime, Andrew.
That's good enough. Let's go with it then. So everyone, if it's safe for you all to do so, I'd like you to relax. Close your eyes and picture the scene. Today, I'd like to take us back to the 24th of April, 2022. And we're in London, Bermondsey to be exact. Now, Bermondsey is in the southeast of London, and it's part of the Borough of Southwark. Now, while Bermondsey was first mentioned by name in a Domesday Book, our long-term listeners will probably be groaning at that mention of that.
The Domesday Book?
Doomsday Book. Did I say Domesday? Doomsday. Thank you, Rachel, for pointing out my mistakes. While it is mentioned in the Doomsday Book, it's believed to have existed a good few hundred years prior to that. Now, I could talk about the area for a while, but because we've got some special guests, I won't. Other than to mention that the original man, dubbed as Britain's Wild Man of Rock and Roll, Britain's first credited rock and roll musician, Wee Willie Harris, was from the area. Now, these days, you can find him working as a janitor in Springfield. But Britain's first ever rock and roll musician, Wee Willie Harris, what a name, is from Bermondsey. So back to this day in April, though, almost 2 years ago. We're in the evening, and it's the 24th, and it's a Sunday. It's dry outside, with the temperature hovering around 7 or 8 degrees Celsius, which is around 45 or 46 degrees Fahrenheit. There's a strong enough southwesterly wind blowing at around 11 miles an hour, turning what would be quite a mild evening into one that you'd definitely feel the cold in. Now, on this evening, we're visiting Delaford Road, number 14 to be exact. Now, it's the home of Dolly Hill and her partner, Denton Burke. Now, Dolly was 64 at the time, with her partner 6 years younger at 58. Dolly was originally from Jamaica, but had made the UK a home many years ago. And she worked for the NHS in what was approaching her twilight working years before retirement. Now, Denton, her long-term partner, he was a trained chef. However, he was working at that time as a sanitation worker, working for the Westminster City Council. Now, you see, it was at the home of Dolly and Denton, one of her daughters, Tantia Offrey Ekufo, who was 45 and a nurse, and liked to be called Raquel, thankfully, so we'll call her that.
Oh, I was about to say, you never give yourself an easy time, do you, with the names? But Raquel is a lot easier,
Is indeed. So yeah, we're going to call her Raquel. And she would often stay at the home to help her mum, because her mum was receiving care for her cancer treatment. Now, additionally, Raquel's daughter, Samantha, who was 27, while she lived nearby in Peckham, her flat was having some renovations on it, so she would often stay at her grand's. Now, they were a close, loving family, as you'd imagine. So on this evening, the house was quite full, with Dolly and Denton, Raquel, Samantha, and also Samantha's boyfriend, Joshua Jacks, who was 28 at the time. I don't know about you all, but Sunday evenings, despite it being the first day of the week, because it's the last day of the weekend, they're usually quite a fair for me. You know, a bit of TV or a film, and some family time. What about you guys?
What are we doing on a Sunday?
Well,
we work.
Yeah, we work. So.
Fair enough, then. Fair enough. And Rachel, what about you? Are you killing small children and animals on a Sunday, or?
I think there's a bit of anxiety on a Sunday evening that, like, is everything ready for the week, and are we mentally prepared? But yeah, I think like naturally they always say if you don't like your job, like Sunday's the day that you dread, isn't it? And that makes me a bit sad because, like, we spend so much of our time at work, don't we? Like, Meg and Neil, you both work on a Sunday as well, like at the weekends when like most people are relaxing and spending time together. It's like you got to enjoy some part of it, haven't you? So that you can get like some sort of happiness from it and not feel like shit, basically.
See, the Sundays for us is the worst because so we start work Thursday night and we finish Monday morning. And it's always a Sunday. So we're trying to sleep during the day and it's always a Sunday people are trying to cut the grass.
Yeah.
Oh, well, fucking
having said that, the Sunday thing, when you're back in school, I had the exact same feeling of the Sunday. Well, not even Sunday evening, just Sunday. I was just dreading it. The day was ruined because I was just like anxious about the day after.
Fair enough. And just for our listeners who are eagle-eared, you'll notice that Rachel didn't deny that she kills small children and animals. So, okay, huh? Then. So,
what have I said?
Nothing at all, Rachel. So, Samantha and Joshua, they've known each other for several years, and they'd only just started dating a few months prior. And at 7:23 p.m. exactly, that evening, Samantha was on the phone to her friend, Rutyana, and on the call, she explained how Joshua has some mental health issues, and they were trying to help him to sort him out, in her own words, that evening. Now, she went on to say they were trying to get him some medication that evening to help him calm down. Now, while she was talking to her friend could actually hear Joshua singing in the background, "I'm coming home," to the tune of the football song, "It's Coming Home," which I'm sure we're all aware of. So later on that evening...
Not want to give us a rendition, Andrew?
No.
Yeah, can you sing it for us? I'm not 100% certain I know which one you're on about. Can you sing it for us?
We'll lose all our listeners, unfortunately, so I can't. But, so later on that evening, Samantha was messaging with her friend Ayo, and with some of the messages saying, "He's calm now, and being around the right energy and people can really help, but obviously we're still getting the meds." So those words, they were unfortunately very premature, because things would go from calm to very bad very quickly. At 5:05, despite being in the same house, Samantha tried to make a phone call to her mum, Raquel, but it was missed. And Raquel replied with a text message. Now, the contents of that message were never revealed, but 9 seconds later, Raquel phoned her daughter back, with the call lasting a mere 27 seconds. So by 6:16, Samantha tried to call Joshua's mum, Norma, along with one other person, but didn't get through to either person. And again, at 17:17, a minute later, Samantha tried to call Joshua's mum again, but this time the call was picked up and it lasted for a total of 2:19. Now, on that call, Norma heard Samantha say, "Norma, he's star. So then all Norma could hear was Samantha moaning and Joshua talking in the background without hearing what he was actually saying. Let's skip forward almost an hour and a half to 1:42 a.m. and a neighbour called the police on 999 and told the operator that she was worried about her neighbours, saying that she had been hearing some disturbing noises for the past 90 minutes. She said at first she thought she was hearing a cat, but then the noise turned into a female voice. She went on to describe how it sounded like someone was struggling next door, how she could hear banging coming from the house and movement, which was unusual, especially at that time of night.
I don't want to drop any shade on the neighbour, but 90 minutes is a long time to tolerate, yeah. Like an element of like nervousness over noises, isn't it?
Mm. Well, not even like even if a noise disturbance, if it were going on continuously for 10 minutes, I'd be round.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but you've also got to think this is a late at night, it's a relatively young female living by herself. You've got to give her that as well.
It's still 90 minutes. Ring the police after.
You're not letting
minutes.
This go.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, no, I see what you're saying. She then went on to describe how she could hear a male voice swearing, repeatedly saying, "F you, F you." She then said 20 minutes later, she heard the same male voice swearing again. While she could not see anything outside, she was unable to get to sleep due to the continued noises coming from her neighbour. She said that it sounded like someone had fallen down the stairs. So after speaking to her mum, she decided to call 999.
Okay, so now she's more just pissed off that she can't sleep, right? She's not actually calling them out of concern, but she's like, right, I can't fucking sleep now, Mom. I'm going to call the police.
There we go. See, there we are. I like to give them the benefit of the doubt, and obviously Rachel doesn't.
Sorry.
Such a good person.
We balance each other out.
Salt of the earth is Andy.
So the police, they arrived extremely quickly. They were there for 1:49, so only 7 minutes later after the 999 call started, not finished. But no one answered the door to number 14 Delaford Road, Bermondsey. Now, due to the nature of the report, the police decided that they had to force entry into the home via the porch door, but they found it partially blocked. Now, what was blocking it was the start of a horrible scene for those police officers. They found it was Denton, Dolly's partner. His body was blocking the porch door.
Oh, shit.
He was laying face down, dead, on a foldable clothes horse that had collapsed underneath him.
I thought you said affordable.
Foldable.
On a very affordable Wilco clothes horse.
So his legs were directly behind the door, and his body, the torso, in the hallway section. His throat had been slit. He had blunt force trauma to both his neck and head, which resulted in, among other things, fractures to his jaw and face.
Oh, gosh.
It seemed he had actually first been attacked upstairs in the house, with large quantities of his blood being at the top of the stairs, and the evidence showed that he had fought hard for his life. Evidence would indicate that he had likely been upstairs when attacked, that he fought for his life and then pushed or fell down the stairs, with his throat being cut at the bottom after he had fallen. Now, if you remember, the neighbour said...
There's been noise down the stairs. It sounded like she fell.
Mm.
Yeah.
Exactly, yes. So that was most likely Denton being pushed or falling down the stairs. So the police, obviously, they were now on full alert because they'd just found a dead body. They slowly made their way through the downstairs of the house, verbally making their presence known while being on high alert. When they got to the kitchen, they found their next gruesome discovery. They discovered the bodies of their grandmother, mother Raquel, and daughter Samantha, bloodied and piled on top of each other.
Jesus.
The police then proceeded to separate them in order to check for signs of life. Samantha, the youngest, the girlfriend of Joshua, was wearing a top and a denim jacket, and was naked from the waist down. They moved her out of the kitchen to see if she was still alive and to try to resuscitate if needed. She had a stab wound to the right-hand side of her abdomen, along with stab wounds to both her back and her neck. Now, Samantha had passed away, along with her mother and grandmother.
How many police officers would have attended this scene? And
two.
So these two are like counting up these bodies. Like, could you imagine just you go into a domestic disturbance essentially, aren't you? Like in the middle of the night, and like you're just walking around this house finding more and more like,
I mean, awful. Like, they say police are trained for it. You can't train yourself for that. It's like I used to work doing incident support, and you know, I was having to go to collisions and stuff, and like, I saw one fatal and I was done.
Mm.
Like, I...
You don't know until you know.
Yeah. I don't know how anyone... Like, they say they get trained. How? What they get...
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, yeah, it's... It must have been horrible. It must have been horrible. Especially because they were stacked on top of each other, just like...
Yeah.
Just like meat. But... So, due to the stab wounds to her side, her back and her neck, Samantha had suffered internal injuries to both of her lungs, her liver, and her right kidney. And she died as a result of these injuries. Now, unfortunately, because of the amount of injuries she had... Sorry.
I don't know what he's... Sorry, I don't know. He just snorted. I don't know what he's laughing
at. Pile of bodies like me, and it's like, how much piles of meat have you got in your house?
He's preparing for the summer. Got the barbecue meat ready.
Fair enough. Because of the amount of injuries that she had, they couldn't actually determine which of those injuries had killed her because there were just so many. Now, Delay is 64 years old. Now, she was a cancer patient, and she was in a pink nightdress, and she was obviously ready for bed. Now, she too had died from stab wounds to her back, her neck, and her upper back. Now, the killing blow for her was a 21-centimeter in-depth knife wound to the side of her chest that went all the way through her heart, and it split her aorta in two. Now, she had quite obviously tried to defend herself in her last moments, suffering defensive wounds to her right hand and her right arm. But how can a 64-year-old woman ever have a chance against a crazed and physically fit 28-year-old man? Yeah. Is it possible?
In this day and age, 60-odd-year-old.
Well, piss off.
It's the new 40, isn't it?
Yeah, come on. Like, the average person. You're yes. thinking of someone like J-Lo, who's got, like, the trainers and all that. She's, like, super fit.
I think, especially if it's unprovoked, she would have been familiar with him being in the house. Probably felt safe to a degree, wouldn't she? So I think when you're caught off guard like that, you don't. I kind of just don't think you have that fight or flight adrenaline as much as you would if you were like a 60-year-old woman walking home on your own, just with streetlights. Does that make sense?
It does. And she just finished a round of chemotherapy, we have to remember as well.
That too, yeah. She's obviously like a body will be depleted from that as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You retract that statement.
Yeah, I got that pretty wrong.
Neil was just trying to be non-discriminatory of, the 60-plus community, right?
Very progressive person.
Yeah. Huh?
Very progressive person you are. Always have been.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So Raquel, Samantha's mother, she had stab wounds to her chest, her neck, and her back and thigh, with a fatal blow coming from a 12.5-centimeter deep knife wound to her chest that went all the way through her heart. So now all four victims were adults who had tried in vain, but tried nonetheless to fight off their attacker. So this would not have happened too quickly. But even so they would have known that it was happening when it started. Now,
what do you mean? Do you mean the first victim
The first victim wouldn't have known, but it happened over 90 minutes and they were in different rooms and different parts of the house as well. So upstairs and downstairs. So it would have been a prolonged attack on an innocent family. So can you imagine that, experiencing that, knowing that you're going to die probably, but also seeing the people that you love die possibly in front of you.
Yeah, it sounds like, what's that one we covered not long back? And he'd got the women basically all in one room and he'd pull one out.
Richard Speck,
yeah. It'd kill one and the others were sat in the room waiting, knowing it was going to happen to them next.
Mm. Yeah, it must be horrible.
I wonder whether it was on his mind that he was going to kill them all at the time, though. You know, whether there was the intention from the start of the killing spree that he was going to absolutely nail them all, or whether, you know, as he went, he kind of, it increased and he kind of got the thirst for it.
Yeah.
It's interesting, yeah. I don't know. We won't. We may find out later, or we may not.
Okay.
So after the police had discovered the four bodies, they didn't know what else they'd find in the house. So that's when they called for an armed response unit to attend the house. So for people who are not in the UK, that's police with guns. Then they arrived very quickly.
Hang on, do police not normally have guns on them?
No, not in the UK, Rachel. You should know that.
Wow, I did not know that.
They struggle to use pepper spray, don't they?
Yeah.
That's no. Rachel's middle classness coming through again. No, they don't carry guns either.
Okay. Right, I'll just keep quiet.
At the airports they do and stuff. That's probably what you're thinking, because you see them at the airports and stuff. Obviously, they have guns there, but no, your average, say, Bobby would not carry a gun with them.
Yeah, that like the amount that I've been sued for using pepper spray.
Yeah.
Can you imagine him with guns?
You're joking me. People, the police get sued if they have to pepper spray someone.
Megan's uncle, your uncle?
It wasn't my uncle. It was someone who was in the family. Yeah, he was a guard, and when he pepper sprayed someone, it was, there's a big uproar about it, and it was kind of like, what do you want them to do? They have to do something to deter.
Exactly. It's like, isn't it like teachers nowadays? Like, teachers can't discipline the kids, so the kids are running circles around the teachers in school. Like, won't be long until that's the same with the popo.
100%. Here we go. I've seen it from my days back in Sheffield.
I was waiting for it.
No, I've seen it where there'll be a group of teenagers and they'll be messing about. And I've seen it where police have drove in and they've been told to F off, and they have. They've just drove back off. And done nothing.
Hey, stop doing that. Fuck off. Okay, bye. On Andy, your way.
Andy, she swore.
I know she did. So yeah, once I'm gonna swiftly move on from there. Once the armed police had arrived, or in Rachel's term, the popo.
Whoop whoop, it's the sound of the police. Sorry. Take that out.
Once they had arrived, they climbed the stairs and they could hear a male's voice, Joshua's voice, coming from the bathroom. Now, the bathroom door was closed, and Joshua had been on the phone a total of 33 minutes, roughly speaking, to his mum, Norma. Now, you remember that his mum had also spoken to Samantha when she had started to be stabbed by her son. So when Samantha said to her mum, "I've been stabbed," that was when she first started to be stabbed. Now, during a phone call with his mum, he made repeated threats to commit suicide, saying that he was, and I'm going to quote here, going to end things and going to make a sacrifice. Now, the police were now outside of the bathroom door, and they could hear him talking, so they repeatedly demanded that whomever was in the bathroom show themselves and surrender, commands that Joshua ignored.
Was he calling himself the sacrifice, or the killings was the sacrifice?
Himself.
I didn't know they did that.
He was going to sacrifice himself, yeah. So once it had become obvious that he wasn't going to open the bathroom door, they forced themselves in to find him naked, laying on the ground in a praying position, with his knees underneath him and his head down. As soon as the door was kicked in, he began screaming, "Allah, take me, kill me now, get rid of me, and God forgive me." He then began singing, "I'm coming home." The police kept, quite forcefully, obviously to tell him to get in the usual position, face down, hands behind him, and therefore, when he wouldn't, they tasered him. After which, he then sprang, it shows you the strength that he's got, because they tasered him and it didn't affect him. So after which he then sprang forward toward them as if he was going to attack them, so they tasered him again. He was then placed in restraints and then seen to by paramedics, who described him as being in a psychotic episode, ranging from being silent and still to attempting to be violent towards anyone and shouting. Joshua was then taken to the hospital to be checked over. And while he was at the hospital, he would tell the medical staff who were treating him, "I ain't even in the wrong. I did them for sacrifice. I will do something stupid again." So after he had been checked out of the hospital and found to be okay, he was taken into custody at the police station. Now, several conversations were recorded at the police station with Joshua and various officers, in which this is like when he was being booked in and stuff, and it was all caught on body cam, in which he repeatedly was talking about his mental health issues and how he lost control. But as opposed to when he was at the house, he was now calm and collected, and he was showing no issues whatsoever. When he was being interviewed, he, for the most part, commented no comment to any question put to him. The police started to piece together his movements on that day, that is, to see if they could explain why he unexpectedly killed four people for no apparent reason, one of them being his girlfriend. They discovered that he was planning a barbecue for there being his and Samantha's family and friends that day. So the pair had visited Audi and they brought a lot of food for that. They bought a lot of food for the barbecue. They maybe even powered it up. No, so the supermarket CCTV, it did show them argue as they were leaving the store, but it was nothing major, and everything seemed like a pretty standard shopping visit for most couples. So the barbecue that they had planned, it didn't end up occurring. But during the Audi shopping trip, Joshua had also bought some presents for Samantha's family. So the pair decided to visit her mum and her gran at the house instead that evening to deliver the presents. So they couldn't figure out anything that could have triggered him to kill. So despite his no comment answers, they had plenty of initial evidence to charge him with the four murders: Dolly, Denton, Raquel, and Samantha. So when it came to the trial, Joshua would plead not guilty to all four murders. Instead, pleading guilty to manslaughter on the grounds of diminished responsibility. So the trial, it turned from a did he do it, because he was accepting that he did it, into why did he do it? So the defense was that he was suffering from a psychotic episode at the time, so he was not in control of himself, and therefore not guilty of murder. The fact that he was suffering from a psychotic episode, it was not actually a point of contention between the defense and the prosecution. They agreed with that aspect. Why he was suffering the episode was where they differed. Because you see, Joshua was an habitual drug user, often taking varying types of drugs, but he constantly smoked weed, strong weed, skunk, as most people call it. Though I think these days all weed is strong, so because it's not the 90s anymore. But anyway, he would smoke on average 3 grams a day, but sometimes up to 7 grams a day.
When you say it's not the 90s anymore,
The weed in the 90s was quite like weak. In the UK at least. And then like you got skunk sometimes and stuff like that. And that was like really strong. But nowadays everything's quite potent and strong. So
okay. How have they made it stronger?
It's just genetics and stuff. Neil knows.
Yeah.
Neil's got some insider info.
Did you say Neil knows?
No,
so this is years ago. This is like 2005. And I had a bit, and the high I got was not like I'd smoked weed, and I found out it had been dipped in LSD.
Off your nut, weren't you?
Yeah, like I think now, like Andy said, it's just, I don't know how, it's something to do with I don't know.
I'm not a scientist, I don't know.
It's just genetics, they just breed, don't they? They just breed, and obviously they get better quality, which is higher strength, what people want.
I can't believe he said Neil now.
But anyway, the defense argued. But you did know, didn't you, though? That's the point. Was it wrong? So anyway, the defense argued that Joshua had an underlying mental health condition, including bipolar affective disorder, which had resulted in him being sectioned in the past. So he had actually been sectioned in the past. Now, the prosecution argued, yes, he had suffered a psychotic episode, but it was a transient psychotic disorder brought upon by his consumption of cannabis, and therefore it was self-induced and not valid under the grounds of diminished responsibility.
I was going to say, I remember when we were doing a case before, I think it was Big Lurch, and that was the argument of, you know, insanity. But because he had willingly took drugs, it was like, no, you throw it out. Yeah. I was going to ask, is it the same in the UK? And, you know.
Yeah, that was the first episode I listened of yours, I believe.
That is naughty if it's not, because you're absolutely right. He's voluntarily taken drugs to have that moment of insanity or whatever it is. So, like, yeah.
So it depends on the jury, doesn't it, what they believe? But yeah, it's a.
What's to blame cannabis?
Yeah, the prosecution. No, it does lead to, it can trigger psychotic episodes in certain people. It's not as harmless as people say it is. Obviously, it's not the same as heroin, but yeah. some people have you believe it's completely.
I feel like we're being really like informative on drug use today. So you know,
we are.
Yeah. More hitter, isn't it?
Yeah, but so yeah, so the defense said that it doesn't matter if he's been sectioned in the past; it was self-induced. So the defense. So that was the prosecution that said that, not the defense. So the defense called two psychologists who argued what they believe, what the defense believed, that it was just a mental disorder. And the prosecution also called an expert witness who contradicted the defense and agreed with the prosecution, as is always the case, isn't it?
Yep.
So the trial would last for 3 weeks in total, and the jury would take just 2 hours to decide on the decision. So what do you all think? Was he found guilty of murder or manslaughter?
Murder.
I'm 100% voting murder here.
Okay, so Joshua would be found guilty of murder. And it would be revealed after his guilty conviction that he'd been released some 5.5 months earlier from prison, in which he was sentenced to 51 months for drug-related offences. Joshua had in total 11 convictions from 20 offences, including possession of an offensive weapon, robbery, threatening behaviour, and his actual 51-month sentence was for a conspiracy to supply heroin and crack cocaine.
This really winds me up. So he should have been in jail.
Yeah, well, he was out on probation, but yeah, he was on license when he killed, yeah.
Yeah.
How often do we cover a case where this has happened?
Yeah. Yeah. We do so often. Now, the judge would state that the jury obviously believed his psychosis was self-induced, so therefore he was responsible for the 4 people he killed. The judge would say he agreed with that viewpoint, and it looked suspicious in the police station after his arrest, because the judge said that it looked to him like he was just trying to start the basis for his diminished responsibility defence by the conversations he was having when he'd been booked in.
Wow. Very calculated then.
Yeah, it seemed like it was. So the judge went on to say that this just backs up that cannabis can be dangerous, and it was purely a myth that it was a harmless drug.
This is the thing, like, I don't know a lot about drugs, guys, and I don't know whether you've listened to previous episodes, but it entertains some of our listeners no end when I'm like, oh, so, Andrew, what would happen when you take this? But what I have heard is quite often they call cannabis the gateway drug, and they say that, like, it's one way or the other. You either stay on it because it's fun, it's recreational, and you appreciate the high or the feeling, the sense, whatever you get from it, but that's enough for you. Or that's then you starting to chase the better high and all of this. And it's naughty, isn't it? Because it is downplayed because of that. And people nowadays, like, I don't know about you guys, but I constantly smell what I imagine is cannabis being smoked in the general public. Because
everywhere.
Yeah,
it is just seen as so, like, blasé with it, isn't it?
Well, I'd say that it's not as simple as saying it's a gateway drug. I mean, there's a lot of evidence behind it. It depends on someone's own. When they start taking it, if they start taking it at a young teenage age, that's when it starts to affect, it can affect the brain, and also it depends if they have any underlying factors and stuff like that. But so that's why it can, for some people, they can smoke it for years. And obviously you've got smoking aspects of it as well, affecting on your lungs, but they can smoke it for years and it doesn't have any impact. But other people, it can have a huge impact. So yeah, it depends on it. But as an aside, listeners, I'm going to let you into a secret here. It does always make me smile when Rachel describes something as naughty.
I thought that as well. As soon as she said it, I thought that's the cutest way to describe it.
I was such a goody two-shoes at school, guys.
So
was I.
Yeah.
In your black polo neck. You're the kind of person that they want to watch out for, Neil.
I tell you what, me and myself and Neil are from the same city. And we're both exiled in Ireland. But it made me think when Neil was talking about on one of your episodes how he'd been stabbed in the leg just randomly walking down the street. That's an interesting story. So listen to the podcast and you'll see it. But I just thought, like, wow, like...
That's an interesting story. It weren't that interesting for me.
He's no, clearly not a big fan of yours.
No, but interesting as in, like, you was just a teenager walking. You was a child walking down the street and someone just randomly decided to stab you. That's an interesting, like, that's unusual.
Do you not remember stuff like that happening?
What year was it?
2003.
Would have been about that year.
No, I wasn't in. I'd moved to Devon in 2003. But no, I don't remember that.
I'm sorry to hear that.
What do you mean you're sorry to hear that? He got out just in time.
Yeah, Andrew's not the one that got stabbed in the street, Neil.
Yeah, and I wasn't doing the stabbing either.
I wasn't stabbed, I was slashed.
Okay. Potato, potato. So anyway, what do we think? What sentence did he get for 4 murders? So if you don't know, if you know already, don't guess. But if you don't know, have a guess. What do you think he got?
I'm going to say life.
Yeah.
Whole life?
Not a whole life tariff, but I reckon he'll have life sentences for each of them.
No, of course, it's murder.
Like 80 years. I thought he like wanted 20, how many 20 years? Times 4.
Yeah. How many years, yeah, in total? What do you serve, minimum?
80.
80, okay. So Rachel is going for the longest ever minimum term given in the history of the UK. That's interesting. Neil, Megan?
Minimum?
Yeah, because it's always 25. Life with a minimum. 25, okay. 50. 50.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's really high as well. 50, I don't think 50 has been done before. But
I feel like Andrew's judging us here.
I am judging you. You're
feeling very attached.
It's easy to judge when you know the answer.
you're true crime aficionado. So he didn't get, you'd think, most people would assume that he got a whole life order for brutal killings, but he didn't. He got a life, obviously, you have to get a life, with a minimum term of 46 years in total for the 4 murders. So he's quite close, Neil. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
After all that judgment, Andrew.
But that was extremely long.
I was only 54 years off.
Oh, yeah. So Rachel's maths, 46 plus 54 equals 80. Shit.
44. God.
It's 34. Listen,
I've just had a baby.
Having babies affects your ability to calculate.
Baby brain is a thing. Thank you.
Anyway, back on track, because this story doesn't finish here. After his conviction, it became apparent that there had been major failings in the probation service. One of the conditions of his license was that Joshua had to attend a mandatory drug course, but one was never scheduled or given to him. The probation service were apparently aware not only that he was deemed to be a high risk of committing violence against others on his release, but also one of his aggravating factors that would cause him to was his drug use, which was still ongoing. They were aware of this. Despite them being aware of this and them having multiple chances to recall him to prison, they did nothing. So after an investigation, it's always after an investigation, after people have died, it really pisses me off this, and so much that I just swore then, but after an investigation, the probation service admitted its failings and said that they had implemented changes. It stated that Joshua was assigned to a newly appointed probation officer who didn't have any management supervision. So basically, they assigned to someone who didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah.
So I don't really want to dwell on Joshua anymore. I could do, there's plenty more stuff out there. And it seems very unlikely that he'll ever be released from prison. And if he does, he'll be a very old man. By Rachel's calculations, he'll be about 145. So instead, let's focus on Delay, a 64-year-old grandmother who was loved by all, who had completed successfully her very last treatment for cancer the day before she was killed. And she had lived for many years and was very much in love with Denton, a man who loved her equally and as much. Then there's Dolly's daughter, Raquel, who loved her family so much, was there out of love for her mother to help care for her. Then her daughter, Samantha, We know from the conversations that she had during her last day how much she loved and cared for people, because she just wanted to help Joshua. She knew about his issues. So three generations of one family wiped out. And for what? What purpose?
I don't think there is one, is there?
I can't think of one.
Yeah, not good enough one.
Exactly. It's a pointless crime. So what did we think of that case, everyone?
Gruesome.
Yeah. Pretty shocking, that. I mean, it, for me, it's...
How did I not know about this? You were in, what, 22?
Yeah, he only got convicted a couple of months ago.
I keep going back to the body stack. That's
yeah,
the disrespect of that. Yeah.
Just thrown to one side.
Like a pile of meat, as Andrew so eloquently put it.
You sure you don't want to name the episode Pile of Meat?
Oh, no.
No, because it's disrespectful. In a word.
Andrew, I feel like we cover a lot of these episodes where I say it's a really pointless crime, but I feel like there was something like telling me this particular crime, like more so than others that we cover, that shouldn't have happened, really shouldn't have happened, because he should have carried on. He should have either had a decent probation service where he was checked upon and checked in on, or he should have still been behind bars, because he was clearly a danger to himself and to others. But also, let's just circle back to that neighbor. How bad must she have felt? Like, if she'd have called 10 minutes in, like, you know,
that would save three people.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You're not gonna sleep easy for the rest of your life knowing that, are you?
No, I guess not. I guess not. There's so much more information in this case, like for the fact that for years people have been trying to help him. Like at one point someone said to him, if you carry on, because he had underlying aggressive personality anyway, which is what helped trigger that. And people have been telling him for years, you need to stop smoking the cannabis and taking up. It wasn't just cannabis. He took lots of other drugs as well. But and like one of his answers he gave was, I know, but I'm not going to let a white man tell me what to do, which just shows you his thinking and his thought process, that he was aware, but he didn't care.
What did he say when they burst through the door? Did he say, I did that for Allah?
Well, yeah, but it was determined that this wasn't a religious thing. He wasn't a Muslim. He wasn't anything like that. It was implied. We never know for certain, but it was implied that it was the start of his defense.
Yeah.
Basically. Mm. So he say he was in a psychotic episode thinking he was God talking to him, but in reality, he knew what he was doing.
And they're the people you've really got to worry about, because, like, I mean, obviously he won't get out now, but they're the kind of people that have fooled probation services in the past, to get out of jail and then go on to commit these awful crimes. Because, you know, again, I'll say it again, this shouldn't have been allowed to happen.
No.
I'm surprised this isn't more known, because it seems like it could be sensationalized very easily.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it was actually in the papers quite a lot. But it was one of those things where it was condensed to a couple of days and then quickly forgotten about.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel in the UK, and like it obviously happens across the rest of the world as well, but if your crime isn't to do with some, you know, picture perfect victim or victims, or like a sleepy town in the UK, or like, you know, something that's really gonna like draw in the reader to be like, oh my god, this is awful, then it won't get the headlines, will it?
You touch on a point there, because without wanting to open that kind of worms, this was a immigrant family, obviously successfully, like they now consider themselves to be British, there's nothing like that, but they were not your pale-skinned, blonde-haired family. They were a successful family in their own right. But obviously, that doesn't fit into the narrative of some national newspapers, does it? They can't. No. They can't make these people victims because then
it's naughty, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a little bit.
Very naughty.
So shall I?
But what annoys me about it is that you've got people in the press that are determining what we should and shouldn't consume as news.
On
that basis, and like you guys on your true crime podcast, I love researching. And especially after I've seen a documentary or read about something, you know, in the news, I'll go away and do my own like research and see what was sensationalized and what might have been more like reality versus, you know, headline grabbing. And that is something that really bothers me, because some people, some victims, some families do not get the airtime that I think that they deserve. Yeah.
We actually we've had a lady get in touch with us. She wants us to cover the murder of her daughter, and she told us, but she got in touch with, who was it? It was like CBS.
She got in touch with many different media outlets,
and they basically told her it's not Hollywood enough for us to cover.
Mm. Oh my God, that's awful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
A particular case that bothers me to this day is Sarah Everard.
Yeah.
And I think that's because as a female, we have been raised to always look after ourselves and be almost on the lookout for the predators and you know, put yourself in the victim's shoes and be aware and be self-conscious. When in reality, the men and the women out there that are the dangers are the ones that need to, you know, be more aware and be watched and be mindful of that sort of stuff. But yeah, that it really bothers me that a couple of weeks, in the weeks after Sarah Everard going missing, the press started publishing figures on other women that had been taken off the streets, kidnapped, abducted, killed. But so many aren't making headlines. They're not having these campaigns on Twitter or Facebook, they're not having marches, they're not having vigils, because the papers, as you've just hit the nail on the head, Megan, don't deem them to be Hollywood enough or sensational enough, and it's not fair. Like, who on earth gets to dictate who does and doesn't get public searches and vigils and thoughts and prayers? It's not fair.
Yeah.
Okay, so I agree completely, Rachel. Shall I wrap this one up then?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Thank you for answering that. but before I do, I want everyone, please do go and check out Neil and Megan, who are at the beginning of their true crime journey. And they are such an amazing start. I've listened to most of their episodes. Their podcast is great. I'm going to leave links to it and all the info you need in our show notes. So wherever you're listening, go back to the episode and there'll be links in there straight to Neil and Megan's podcast. And I'll also put some on the social medias as well. So before I wrap up, any last comments for our listeners from both of you on your podcast?
Come in with an open mind.
I hope you can take a joke.
Yeah. I really admire how much research and information Megan puts out on each episode. But still, in a light heart, it's very clever how, like, I can say it's clever, can't I?
If you want.
I can say it's clever, but we'll stick to the point, and we try and make it as, like,
we're trying to just give you a little bit of comic relief through all the trauma.
But we never joke about the case.
Yeah.
But we always keep it related to the case.
I think you can take a guess here. This is basically the podcast. I'll try say something to the point and Neil will ramble on a bit.
And you've probably got the impression today, like, Andrew doesn't like rambling on. He kind of like reins me in a lot of the time as well. But yeah, I think the pod is brilliant, and I love the swearing, and like, that's why I follow a number of other pods that I do, because I just love how you can kind of, like, I live in a house with two young children, and I have to behave a lot of the time and be aware of what I'm talking about. And I feel like I can kind of get lost in a good episode of true crime with a good swear, because, you know, it's directly into my ears, and I'm chuckling away, thinking no one else can hear it. So yeah. So yeah, love the pod and definitely recommend it to our listeners.
Exactly.
Thank you. We really, really appreciate that.
And that's Mortal Musings, by the way. I don't know whether you'd mentioned it, but
well, yeah.
Mortal Musings podcast.
Mortal Musings podcast.
Yes, indeed. You find it. So, okay, Grant. So this has been season 4, episode 18, called Mortal Musings. And if it's safe for you to do so, I'd like you to relax. Close your eyes and picture the scene. 46 years. 4 lives gone. That's 11 and a half years per life. Multiple more lives impacted forever. If you was a judge, what sentence would you have given? So thank you everyone for listening. And thank you, Neil and Megan, for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.